Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. And I'm once again joined by my two co-hosts, Andrew Batista and Kevin Fernandez. We were talking off air. Andrew's really been rubbing it in. Still in Portugal, complaining about how too hot it is, having too much nice food. It must be really tough for you at the moment, Andrew.
It was tough finding shade, man. I was outside and I was just getting cooked. But yeah, it's been great, man. And I enjoyed a very good week of football as well. It was a great return to the Liga after the international break. It was like a bunch of great games.
And have you been able to see any matches yet? Is that on the cards in the stadiums?
No, not yet. No, it's just I had family over. I just couldn't make it work. But hopefully soon. I'm hoping to be at the Mingo Derby next weekend.
That's very exciting indeed. Look forward to correspondence from that game. Kevin, once again, me and you stuck here, but nothing like a great weekend of Liga Portugal to brighten things up.
Yeah, I'm not going to act as if I'm happy because weather's been pretty miserable on our end at least. But yeah, at least it's an excuse to watch the football. And it was, yeah, great weekend. A couple of managerial changes already, as is tradition in Liga Portugal. So yeah, plenty to get into.
Exactly. Perfect weather for staying in and doing nothing but watching football all weekend. So can't complain too much. Well, as always, we're going to deal with the biggest games in the league from the top clubs, and then we'll take you through some of the results from the rest of the league as well. But let's start, as we always do, at the top of the table, as Porto beat Nacional 1-0 at the Estádio do Dragão. It wasn't an easy game. They had to rely on a first half penalty to get their only goal. And I think it's fair to say, perhaps a somewhat controversial penalty at that. There were a lot of chances in the game, which Porto didn't end up taking, but that one goal sufficed, and it was another important win to preserve that perfect start to the season. The only team in the league to have that perfect start after five games. Andrew, there's been some great performances this season. There's also been some of the more tricky games that I had to get over the line. I think this one falls more into that camp of a more difficult game that had to be overcome.
Definitely. And a difficult game against a good team, you know, very well coached. But this is the kind of games that you have to win if you want to be champion. You know, this is, you saw it last season with Sporting and before. There's going to be some games where you're going to struggle. You're going to have to dig deep, find a solution to some of your problems. Injuries are going to come up. And credit to Farioli. I thought he did really well to sort of get us over the line. Wasn't our best performance, but we still saw a lot of good things. We got to see Kivior's first start after like two training sessions, and he was really impressive, some really big tackles, and he reads the game really well. I mean, we know he's a good player, and that's why, you know, everyone was really excited when he arrived. And then we saw Pablo Rosario at right back, and I thought he did all right. It's never easy to play out a position like that, especially in a team you just arrived in and a league you don't really know. And I think that just shows you the trust that Farioli has in Rosario, because obviously he's managed him before and he did do well. The midfield was well marshalled by Nacional. I thought Varela struggled in this game. Froholt struggled to do the things that he does really well. And I also think that just the composition of the midfield is different when you have Rodrigo Moura in there. And Varela had to sort of compensate a lot for sort of Moura's movement. But, you know, again, they found a way. Pepe with a good return, although he had a really big chance and he should have scored that. You know, you can't sort of even make an excuse for him. You know, he got away from Paulinho Boia and he was able to set himself and then just a wild shot. The penalty, I agree, it wasn't like the most clear-cut penalty I've seen. I think the foul before that from, who was it, from the defender, Zavitor, when he pushed Samu in the back. I thought that was probably more of a penalty than the actual penalty, but Samu did what he had to do from the spot, score the goal. And as for Nacional, like I said, good team, well coached. We know Tiago Margaredo, and this is probably the best squad of players that he's had since being at Nacional. And they made it difficult. They try to stay in the game, which is what you do against one of the big teams. You try to stay in the game, try and nick a goal. And it did feel very nervy in that second half, towards the end especially. But for all of that, Nacional only really generated one shot on target throughout the whole game. So I don't think it was sort of as close as people think, but it is still just a 1-0 win. and you'd expect more from Porto, but I'm glad we got the 3 points. And again, Farioli showed that, you know, he can make things work even without his starting 11. He can sort of make adjustments and change things, because obviously now we don't have Luke de Jong for a while, William Gomes as well for a while, and Gabriel Vieira is just coming back from that sort of back injury. So yeah, I'm happy overall, and a big win to stay perfect.
Yeah, and I think we've all watched games like that from our teams and other teams where, you go into the game as favorites, you're kind of going to dominate the game, dominate the ball, and for whatever reason, it's just not quite happening. The chances aren't going in and the time's ticking along and you're thinking, is this going to be our day? And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And obviously in this game, the penalty made the difference. I think you kind of summed it up well, Andrew, perhaps a little bit. Not to some people's taste, if I can put it that way, the penalty decision, but it is what it is. And on another day, there were, I think, two or three, if we're being kind of harsh about it, real big chances to score outside of that. So I think, on another day, maybe they take another chance, it's 2-0, but then equally it could have gone the other way and not gone in Porto's favour. So an important result nonetheless. Kev, before I come to you, Andrew, I wonder if actually if you could just expand on one of the things that you said there about Rodrigo Moura in the team, because I thought it was really interesting to see him starting in the midfield three and it did change the dynamic. I wonder how much you felt it was for the better, because obviously we did see, I thought, some moments of his individual nature that we know him for, but also it wasn't as perhaps secure as the midfield has been in recent weeks.
And you're always going to see that sort of individual brilliance that he has. He's such an exciting player, and every time he grabs the ball, you're kind of waiting for him to do something. And he's very brave with the ball. He'll take on players, and he's got obviously great quality. And I did see a little bit sort of better. There was better movement from him out of possession. It did seem like he was chasing the ball down a bit more, but he was doing it more like maybe not as controlled and as sort of positionally disciplined as he should have done. I think he's probably going to learn that if that's the position he's going to play in that midfield. That's something you'll have to learn. I'm not sure if that's his best position. Time will tell. I don't think that's, you know, going to suit him long term. But he was somewhat effective and he did a job and we sort of got over the line. You know, if it sort of cost us, then we could be having a different conversation. But I think he's going to be used this season more than people think. I think Farioli's trying to figure out exactly where to play him. Should he start over Borja Sainz? I don't know. Borja Sainz has that experience. He's a guy that, you know, he took like six shots in this game, Borja Sainz. He was shooting from everywhere. There was a point I was like, dude, stop shooting. But you sort of want that from your players when you're trying to find a goal. He's trying to figure something out. And that's why I think he needs to stay in the team. And that's really the only other position I could see Rodrigo Moura taking if it's not in the midfield. And I'd rather have Gabri Veiga in the midfield personally at the moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, but we'll see how it develops. And Kevin, the thing that interested me about Farioli's post-match comments was that he kind of chose not to sort of air any like real frustrations about his own team in terms of the difficulties. He was very much in praise of Nacional and the way they played, and he was gave them credit for making it a difficult game. What do you make of that? Because they obviously weren't able to make a huge number of chances, but they did play quite a competent game in terms of trying to stifle Porto as much as they could.
Yeah, I think Nacional, in terms of strategy, I thought they did really well. I don't think the stats really reflect the danger that they caused at certain times to Porto. More in the second half, I think Porto were completely dominant in the first. And look, we can talk about the penalty until the dogs go home. I think it's more unfair in the fact that it was kind of involuntary, if anything, that foul. And I think it's just a shame because even if it does have to be called a foul, it was a foul. The player did foul the attacker. It's just the fact that he didn't mean to do it. He was with his eyes on the ball. The foul didn't really impact the play as such. It's just unfortunate. So, look, it is what it is. Porto, at the end of the day, they did deserve a goal from that game because they created more than enough chances. So, I think Nacional, they don't have merit in the scoreline because that could change on any day. But they had merit on the way that they prepared the game because they did make it quite difficult for Porto to win stages just to break down when they were settled. Because as much as I do appreciate Pepe and the sort of ball carrying he brings. He brings chaos when he enters the final third. When he shoots himself, it's never really that good. The end product is not really there, but as a player, he does bring a lot to Porto. I think that as good as he is, Alberto, he's a threat along the whole flank. And when I say that, I think Porto lacked a bit of dynamism, if anything. I think Pepe was quite rigid. When he gets on the ball, he kind of explores different avenues. When he's off the ball, I think he's very much limited to the right-hand side. I think that's why Froholt quite often had to come wide and try and facilitate play there a little bit more. If you have Alberto there, he can provide very good service by himself. He can attack the flank just and extend the pitch very well by himself. So I think that's where Porto really missed him, because the left-hand side, Francisco Moura, he works a little bit better in space. Again, if he's crossing the ball in, he's quite decent. Other than that, he's not exactly a dribbler. He doesn't really create as much by himself. So I think Nessie and I were quite happy to really make it compact and tight in central spaces and force Porto wide a little bit. And I think that's obviously merit to Nacional. Porto, look, they don't have the players at their disposal that they might want. I think Alberto and Martin would have made a bit of a difference, even perhaps the likes of William Gomes, or having Gabri Veiga to push Mora out to a flank. Whatever it is, they need to start finding a way to deal with that. It's how it is. Sporting will have to do the same with their injuries, and so will Benfica. So yeah, I think Nacional, they prepared the game well in that instance. They made it a little bit more difficult for Porto. As much as Porto are a very press-heavy team, they like to go direct. They like to play very quick. Nacional, they had less success when they entered that sort of game. When it was very end-to-end, Porto created their best chances, it seemed. And when Nacional managed to set up their block and stay compact, I think Porto had more difficulties. And if it's not for, it seems, the disciplinary record, which really harmed them against Sporting, they are causing teams problems with their aggressive nature. It might go against them at times because they are very aggressive in the duels, perhaps too much so at times. And for a whistle happy ref at times, it might go against them even more. But look, it's not difficult to visit the Dragão, less so against a team that is on very good momentum. And they managed to make it very difficult for Porto. And I have to agree with Andrew. I'd probably say that that is one of the best Nacional sides that we've seen in recent years, even before they went down the last time. Paulinho Boia, as much as the end product wasn't exactly there, he created chaos every time he came forward with the ball. I think Labidi and Dias were quite good as well. Obviously, Labidi had to follow Froholt out to the flank a few times since he was kind of roaming a little bit. Matheus Dias, I think he was a standout midfielder. Defensively, didn't really put a foot wrong. And even other than that, I think João Aurélio, that was a great performance from him. Leader's performance, very, very old school. I think he probably lost the ball about 20 times just shooting it forward, but defensively impeccable. And that's what you need. 37 years old, really commanding the back line. And Ferenc, I think he did quite well as well. Made the saves he needed to make, came off his line quite well, which not every goalkeeper at this level does. So, yeah, I'm not worried for Nacional based off of this performance. I think there's quite a lot of potential. On another day, a couple of those chances that didn't end in a shot would end up in a shot, would threaten Diogo Costa a little bit more often. That chance that he saved near the end, that's a game winner. That's 3 points winning, at least. And it cements Diogo Costa once again as one of the best goalkeepers in Europe. That is difference in level. That is why you have a player of that level in your team. And yeah, as much as Porto on another day, they could have won 3 or 4 nil. Perhaps that could have been a 1-1 on another day with a little less luck, or a little bit more, or a lot more luck for Nacional. And yeah, I think it's a case of Farioli having to adjust a little bit, because this was not an ideal game in any sort. I think there's dynamics down the flanks that he needs to adjust a little bit because of the personnel. It changes. Even in terms of the substitutions, Perez is out for the rest of the season after coming on just a few minutes. That's a huge loss in terms of depth, in terms of the moment of form that one was having. He was really recovering his Famalicão form, and it kind of changes the whole dynamic because Kvyat was really considered as an option for left back as well if needed. Before the injury, Rosario actually came into the midfield area, and it ended up having to be Eustáquio who came in there. And I don't think that's clearly that that's a huge difference. I think Rosario will have to be the backup six. I don't see Eustáquio having much success in those sorts of midfield areas. I think he needs to be more of a utility player. He seems a little bit more limited in terms of what he can really do on the ball. So, yeah, I don't think it's a negative win for Porto at all because I think all the big three, all things considered, had quite a difficult weekend in different sorts of scale. But still, they got the 3 points against a tough team. The island teams will not make it easy at home or away. They still got the 3 points. We have a few changes in the squad that are detrimental to the way that they were playing initially. And look, we still need to remember that Farioli is at the beginning of his tenure and he's still learning his squad as well, what he can do, what he can adjust, still getting familiar, still implementing his style of play. So, yeah, considering that on another day, it could have been a lot more convincing on the scoreline. I don't think that anyone can be too worried or too disheartened at this performance. It's a proper champion's performance, as Andrew said.
Yeah, I completely agree. And actually, one of the things that's impressing me most about not just Porto, but Farioli as well, is the kind of the positive and yeah, the strong mindset that he's bringing to this team. I mean, he came into a team where everyone was prepared to say they were going to have a bad season. They came off a bad season, and he just doesn't seem to be allowing that mindset at any point to creep into the team. He keeps them playing sort of relentlessly and with a winning attitude. And you know, Andrew, I guess the one thing we should finish on is, you know, there were one or two setbacks, like Kevin said, most notably the injury to Nahuel Pérez, which is obviously a very bad injury. And there are now injuries in the team, likes of Luke de Jong, William Gomes, and some other long-term injuries as well. So perhaps, you know, there will have to be changes made, but it doesn't seem at any point like this is a team that's kind of getting nervous or getting kind of set back by these things. He does seem to be able to keep this momentum going in a very positive way, which I think is a really good sign.
Definitely, and I think the team and the fans are sort of encouraged by how the adjustments, well, the way he makes his adjustments, how they keep working. Now, if they stop working, we'll see what happens. But he's sort of doing what he has to do. We're winning games. I mean, this was a game we just, we deserved to win, but it was a tougher game, and the adjustments he made worked. He's using his whole team, I guess, because he has to. And even some of the Nuno Pérez injury that you mentioned, there are other players he can kind of put in centre back if he has to. I mean, I don't think Eustáquio is going to play much. We've seen him play at centre back before. I think it's something he can do, maybe not as effectively as a real centre back, but he can do it because he is sort of more, he's got better defensive characteristics. But it doesn't discourage me, but it just you get worried if you're suddenly in a huge injury crisis where, if someone wasn't back now, then I'd be really worried, that sort of thing. And you just hope that everyone can kind of stay fit and we can keep this sort of positive momentum going.
Absolutely. And 5 wins from 5, it doesn't get much more positive than that. So long may it continue from Porto's perspective. Let's move on, gents, to talk about Sporting's game. A 2-1 win. They came from behind to beat Famalicão. Famalicão's 20-year-old captain, Gustavo Sá, heading them into the lead. But Pedro Gonçalves and Luis Suárez scored in either half to give them a win. Kevin, Famalicão, tough opponents, but I think Sporting also created quite a number of chances, similar to Porto, that they didn't take. So in some ways, you could say there were plenty of opportunities for them to get the win.
Yeah, if anything, you could have probably compared this a little bit to the Porto game in certain instances, just because it seemed like, in terms of the numbers at least, for Famalicão, they never looked like they were going to get back into the game after Sporting scored their second. So, all things considered, I think it was positive defensively in that aspect. But at the same time, I think we could say that Sporting have been causing more problems than needs to be done just because of the set pieces. Against Nacional, it could have cost them very, very badly. And once again, those crosses from deep areas, wide areas, problems constantly. Always a man completely free, whether the ball goes to the goalkeeper, whether it's shanked wide, whatever. There's always danger created from it, and that needs to be very, very quickly addressed because that's been a consistent pattern. And we know the power of set pieces nowadays in modern football, the way that Arsenal, the likes of Arsenal, were exploiting it, at least in the Premier League, it's more prevalent than ever. If Liga Portugal starts going down that route, or at least European football, Sporting might have much more difficult games just because of that. So I think overall, not wanting to really paint it as a picture that Sporting were terrible, but I think Famalicão did prepare the match very well, as did Nacional. I thought that they made it very difficult, especially in the duels, second balls. I think they won the majority, at least in important areas. I think Gustavo Sá, as you mentioned, not just the goal that he scored, but really he was very important. He plays a sort of hybrid role. Sometimes he's closer to the striker, sometimes he drops back more into the midfield, and he outnumbers the Sporting midfield in this game quite often. He had very important passes, linking play, outnumbering the Sporting midfield and just causing issues with the sort of intelligence. He knows where he needs to be to really make Sporting's midfield uncomfortable when they need to try and press, when they need to drop back, when they need someone to support the two in midfield. Because at that point, you'll have a three against the two. So I think Sarr definitely deserved this goal because his role was key in everything that Famalicão did. And overall, and this is a little bit more tactical, if anything, but I think when Sporting lose the ball, the press at times, if it's not the players immediately on them, it's very desynchronized. I think there's a lot of space between the attack, the midfield, the defense, and if you have a little bit more quality, a little bit more of a transitional threat than Famalicão seem to have in this game, it could cause Sporting a lot of problems, at least in Europe, when it seems like that sort of end-to-end play is a little bit more likely than Sporting dominating a game completely. So overall, I think Sporting, they did do a good job of shutting out Famalicão mostly. I don't think Virginia was forced to a lot of saves. I think Sporting did create enough chances and squandered, once again, quite a lot of chances that on another day they go in and the game is very, very different. After all, Famalicão were limited to a set piece goal. But I did see similar problems to what Porto suffered in a way because, again, going wide, I think there was a lack of creativity again. Mangas, look, I think we've talked about him enough. He's limited. He's a limited player. He's not the most technically proficient. He doesn't have a dribble in him. He won't go past his man. If you put him in space, he can put a decent enough cross in, but that's all he can do. He's not the same as Maxi Araújo, who will beat his man, he can come inside, he can go out. That's already more than enough to create doubt in your defender in comparison to Mengus, who is a lot more conservative. Vagianidis, I think he was solid. But again, I don't think he was exactly a massive upgrade on Fresneda just because it looks like he's still settling in. The times that he did overload the right-hand side, it seemed like very predictable play. Like you knew he was going to get the ball on the over on the overlap. He didn't do anything crazy. Genda, he's not the same player as Jenny. I think he's much, much better as a complete product just because he does have the crossing ability, his passing ability unlocked that Pedro Gonçalves goal, a marvelous cross pass because that is his bread and butter at this point. Those passes from deep, whether it be a cross, whether it be that sort of cross field pass, he does that any single day. Whether he attacks and stretches the pitch enough, and whether he takes off on his man enough, I'm not too sure. Jenny does it with volume, at least. Even if he doesn't get the end product at the end of the day, he does offer that threat. So I think, again, similar to Porto, suffering from a couple of changes in personnel, and maybe that affects the dynamic a little bit more because it seemed that Mengesch was open on the left more than the players on the right-hand side who do have more end product or do have more of a variety to their game were open. And another thing that I noticed, if anything, I like Kvaratskhelia, but I think he forces that long ball very, very much. And it's a little bit complicated when you're facing a lower block, a very organized, compact block. If you have the likes of Inácio and De Bast next to you, they do the same thing. You don't have a player like Morita who can go forward, who can kind of cause an overload, who can support the attack, enter the final third, even enter as a box crusher, just coming in late and trying to provide a final touch. Kvaratskhelia, really, he was more in build up and he was very much forcing the same sort of paths. And even Diomande, who was missing, and the difference that he makes in the back line can't be underestimated, brings a little bit more patience, maybe circulates the ball a little bit more, and defensively, he's the aerial threat, both trying to protect the back line and even providing a goal himself, and just being the aggressor in the back line, perhaps pausing those sorts of transitional threats from Famalicão before they even happen. So I think there are a couple of things that Sporting will need to tweak, even if it's going into Europe. But the standouts for this, De Bast, again, his passing, incredible. Kienda's passing was incredible in that game as well. The chances that he'd create for an 18-year-old winger, you wouldn't think of his passing range being perhaps at this stage the best part of his game, but you could probably say that that is Kenda's case. Suarez in link up, just perfect again. He does not have a moment's rest. He presses every single cause. He's really a leader from the front and he makes everyone around him better. And I think this is probably Pedro Gonçalves, one of his better games, just how he'd really accelerate the plays, one touch, two touch, bring a little bit more dynamism and be floating around a little bit more, be a little bit more unpredictable to that Famalicão back line. And their standouts would probably be alongside Sa, their two centre backs. Ba, if he carries on at that rate, he's not only staying in the back line, but he's probably got a higher ceiling than De Haas. Because on the ball, I think he does look a little bit more composed. And obviously, that build, it's very much a Diomande sort of build. You can see that going to the Premier League and slotting in very well if he continues that sort of growth. And there has, once again, he's been Famalicão's standout for a second season. He's continuing that sort of form. And whereas individually, I think the likes of Pinheiro or Bondo or even Soares, they didn't have their best games. I think there has been unbelievable in terms of consistency and defending his own box. Nothing really gets past him. I think he was quite unlucky to have that, especially that Pedro Gonçalves chance go down his side. But look, that very difficult when it looks like there's a little bit more insecurity from Bondo and Amorim than usual. And with his stature, it's a little bit difficult to defend when someone's coming on your last shoulder. So yeah, I don't think it was Sporting's best performance of the season, but considering it is one of the most difficult grounds to visit against perhaps the most informed team other than the big three, I don't think you can be very mad at that because in terms of XG, it was 0.95 against 2.21. On paper, at least, it justifies the result in full. I don't think you could say that Famalicão at any point would deserve more than the result that they got, which was a 2-1. Sporting had more than enough chances to shut it out at the vital moment when in the past Sporting's performances have dropped a little bit. It seemed like they managed to shut out Famalicão quite well. So not the most aesthetically pleasing, but definitely a professional performance from Sporting.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Sporting at the moment for me, it seems like obviously a lot going well, but that perhaps there are lots of different players going through different patches of form at the same time, which is, each week we seem to be talking about a kind of a different player who's done well and a different player who's perhaps underperformed. I mean, it wasn't long ago that Pedro Gonçalves wasn't really contributing as much as we were used to him doing, but I think he's been very good definitely in the last couple of games. But then even the likes of Trincão, who started the season so strong and probably hasn't contributed as much in the last couple of games either. And with the changes at fullback and stuff like that, there have been some kind of inconsistencies. Although I think you're right to point out that it's not yet been enough to kind of really disrupt the team in any meaningful way. Whether that will happen or whether it will go the other way and things will really kind of gel and they'll start to kick on remains to be seen. Andrew, I'm interested to get your perspective on the game, but also on Famalicão. Particularly because they're a team we've not discussed yet. Kevin's right to point out that they're in good form, fifth in the table. This was only their first loss of the season as well, which was quite impressive. But yeah, what did you make of them? Because they weren't, yeah, like Kevin said, they didn't make a huge impact on the game, but they showed somewhat what they could do. And particularly for me, I think Gustavo Sarr showcased why he's very highly rated.
Yeah, I thought this was a really entertaining game. I thought it was very intense. It felt like Famalicão were really up for it. They had that sort of home record on the line, the 250 odd days they hadn't lost or something like that. Sporting come to town, and I thought they gave a good account of themselves. I agree with what Kevin was saying. Sporting definitely deserved the win. Famalicão had some good moments. Quenda, obviously, that great pass to Pot. That was a good pass, but he sort of redeemed himself for the chance he should have scored earlier,
Yeah.
in like the 15th minute or something. That
Two of
was
them, if anything.
a huge chance. Yeah, there was actually two big chances, but I think that first goal goes in early in the game, and I think it's a different game because literally a minute later, Famalicão score the opener. But as for Famalicão, I thought they played really well. Gustavo Sarr, I mean, we've spoken about him so many times. He's such a sort of force in that midfield. He was all over the place, and you could tell the difference as soon as he came off. You know, the trying to make some changes towards the end while they were chasing the game, although it never really felt like they were going to get back into the game. But as soon as he left the pitch, you could just tell it changed everything. There was no more sort of connection from the midfield to the attacking, and it made Sporting's life easier in that last 10 minutes, in my own opinion. But I think they did the right thing by focusing on set pieces because they tried it a few times. That same sort of cross into the box, because the thing that Sporting, you know, does struggle with, and then obviously they don't have their first choice goalkeeper, Virginia in goal, that makes it a little bit difficult as well. And I agree that, you know, Ibrahim Ba was very good, Justin Das very good as well. I thought Pedro Bondo had a tough game, but he was defending Quenda, so that's always going to be difficult. But he's a solid fullback. I like Rodrigo Pinheiro, who didn't have a great game, but I think he's one of the best sort of fullbacks in this league. Damory had one of his worst games. I haven't sort of seen him play this badly in a while. He was losing the ball all over the place. He wasn't very composed in possession. And then there was Marcos Peña, who I thought had a very good game. And the midfield, Sporting's midfield, really struggled in that game because they were kind of neutralized because they were still moving with the ball. But I thought they were very good at sort of cutting through the spaces that Sporting did have in the midfield. And overall, this is a good Famalicão team. I think, you know, you lose against Sporting at home, that's tough, but you've got a good team, you've got good momentum. They play some good football. They are quite direct in times. They use their fullbacks well. They use Gustavo Sarr very well, and he does have that strange sort of hybrid role that he plays, but it works really well. I mean, that's his second headed goal this season for a pretty small, like, midfield guy. So you can see he's all over the place. He's moving around, he's following play, and he kind of gets to do whatever he wants at 20 years old as the captain. So that
Yeah.
shows real leadership skills, and that shows that perhaps he won't be around for so long. But I think for now, if you're familiar, Calm, sort of lick your wounds. It's not like you were sort of hard done by in this game. You were beaten by a very good team that definitely deserved the win. I did have a note here to ask Kevin about the fullbacks, but I'm glad he told us what he thinks about Mangos and Vaginis, because you know, the only real criticism I have of them, of Sporting, was the fullbacks. I just don't think they offer that much in this game, and I think most games anyway. We got to see Ioannidis, who's the new striker that came in. I don't watch the Greek league, so it's literally the first time I've ever seen this guy play, but he's huge, he's physical. And it's interesting to see how how Rui Borges is going to use him, because in this game, Luis Suarez was on the pitch with him. They were both sort of on the pitch playing together, so that's kind of interesting. But yeah, like I said, good game from Famalicão. They lost, but you lose to Sporting. You move on, think about the next game. And I think they're actually going to have a pretty good season, which is something I feel like I've said about Famalicão every season, and then it just kind of unravels. But hopefully they can sort of get it right this time.
It's such an interesting case, isn't it? Because I feel like Famalicão have been real protagonists on the Long Ball Football podcast since we started 5 seasons ago now. Obviously, off the back of that season they had with the likes of Pedro Gonçalves, Tony Martinez in the team, and since then they've, I think they seem to capture the imagination somewhat, whether that's amongst Portuguese football fans or those with a kind of outside interest in the league. I think there's often this kind of clamour for maybe a new team to disrupt the more traditional teams, and we know that they have some kind of backing behind them. It hasn't really gone as well, perhaps, as it should have done in recent years, when we know the kind of what they're able to do a little bit more in the transfer market than other clubs, and they, to their credit, do things quite well in the transfer market in terms of being able to find talent from places where others aren't. So I always find them a kind of interesting case. And as you say, Andrew, maybe this year will be the one where they kind of live up to the potential once again. But yeah, it wasn't spectacular, although they are having a good season. So definitely I'll be keeping an eye on their next game. And Kev, before we move on, I wanted to come back on, well, actually one player in particular, just to expand a little bit, perhaps Giovanni Kenda, because of course he was starting instead of Jenny, and he hasn't been starting a lot this season, although a very highly rated player, a player that will be moving to a very big club very, very soon. I think, a player that we want to see do well. I think a player who wants to play regularly and do well in the Premier League probably needs to score that chance, that big chance that he missed. If he wants to play at that level, there are things that he needs to add to his game. But he was given an opportunity here, and I'm wondering how you see kind of his place in the team, maybe not just in the short term, but as the season progresses.
Look, I think in terms of Kenda really cementing his place in the 11, it's up to him because he's a more talented player than Jenny. I have no doubts. But I think that Jenny, what sets Jenny apart and what really makes him a real force for the team, like a really good utility player, is the mentality that he brings, which is, it doesn't matter whether he misses five, six, seven take-ons, he'll go for the eighth. And that is chaos every single time against a low settled block, which is what you'll usually face in a Portuguese league. If you are like Sporting, Benfica, Porto, you need a player that will constantly take on his man, and no matter what the result is, he'll do it again, and they'll try and make that one difference moment. So I don't think that's what Kenda brings to the side. As much as he has that capability, I think he's even too mature for his age, which doesn't sound like it makes sense, but because he has the capacity for that pass, that rupturing pass, which he did in this game, because he can cross the ball so well, because he has such great tight control, and he can improvise from any moment, perhaps he doesn't go attacking down the corridor that much, as much as Jenny does, just stay glued to the flank and attack that space. I think that there is still a little bit of work to do with Kenda. I think he needs to become a little bit more confident to really do these sorts of actions in a repeated manner, which is what is really needed. Perhaps not to overthink too much. And I think it's undoubted that if Jenny does have another thing above Kenda, it's the shooting ability. Jenny has made a difference in multiple derby games, whether it be against Porto, whether it be against Benfica. Kenda, two big chances in that game, both squandered, and that cannot continue. When you go into the Premier League, that's going to be very heavily scrutinized. Obviously, he is employed by Chelsea. He will go into that environment, whether he then goes to Strasbourg or whatever. That's up to that group to decide. I'm not going to get into that. But that is that relationship with the opposition goal, having that sort of that composure in the final moment that needs to improve. That's not something I even saw as too much of an issue when he was in the academy. whether he still needs to be unlocked a little bit mentally, whether he needs to be unleashed in a certain way, given a little bit more confidence. I think that's more of his issue than anything else. The quality is there, the potential is more than there. It's a case of if Szczęsny is going to maintain that starting place, it's more because he's a more of a seasoned professional than Kende is, at least in a role where, look, you have potential to work on volume, not just on one moment. You're not judged on just the one that you get wrong, you're judged on the one that you get right. And Jenny is not afraid to take the risk. Maybe Kenda, because he has so much in his arsenal, he's a little bit more pensative and takes a little bit more of a moment, maybe second guesses himself before really executing that final pass or shot or whatever it may be.
And I think, do you know what? I think it's also an interesting test for Rui Borges, because I don't know if he's worked with these kind of elite talents before in a way that Amorim was able to prove that he could and bring out the best in those kind of, like Nuno Mendes, for example, is a perfect example in that first season where he took that player from the youth team, put them into the first team straight away and trusted them and was able to get that level of performance out. So it's an interesting kind of. That's another aspect of this Rui Borges tenure that we're kind of yet to see develop a lot, which is, yeah, it will be, we'll see how it goes. I mean, we saw a cameo for Samoyish at the end of the game, and I thought he looked very promising. So, I'm sure Rui Borges will want the best for those young players as well. But there's a lot of developing to be done with these players, no matter just the raw ability that they have. Gents, let's keep it rolling, move on to Benfica. I'm sure both my co-hosts will have been devastated to see that Benfica dropped points in a 1-1 draw at home against Santa Clara. They led 1-0 until a costly error from Otamendi gifted 10 men Santa Clara a 94th minute equaliser in a game that really should have been out of sight a long time before that. Santa Clara got a player sent off in the 40th minute, let's not forget. My question for you guys, and I'll come to Andrew first. Benfica had a lot of chances in the game. They couldn't take any of them. Is it as simple as a game of missed chances, or was there something kind of deeper going on in this game?
I don't think there's just something deeper going on in this game. I think there's something deeper going on at Benfica. I think they are really in a strange place at the moment. I'm not really sure what else I can say about this Benfica team that hasn't already been said. Every week we're kind of saying the same thing. Bruno Lage insisted on this two striker thing. There were some more shots from distance in this one. That's something that I sort of hadn't really seen before, mostly from Richard Rijs, but you could tell they were sort of having to shoot from distance because Santa Clara were very well organized defensively. And this Benfica team struggle against teams that are well set up. They just don't have the capacity to sort of unlock that. They're much better with teams that let them sort of transition on them. You're playing against 10 men for upwards of 60 minutes, and to not be able to get the result, it shows where this team is at the moment. And Benfica, like Porto and even Sporting these days, if the results start waning, the pressure on the manager really skyrockets in an incredible way. Particularly the media in Lisbon, they'll be circling Lage already, and you can kind of see that already. And on top of that, there's the elections coming up, so there's a bit of a circus at Benfica at the moment. I say with as little glee as possible. They clearly struggle against any sort of half competent low block. And Santa Clara, to their credit, put on a sort of a masterclass in what you should do if you get a man sent off early. You stay compact, you sort of ride your luck at times for sure, and you just stay in the game. And then you hope you nick something at the end. And that's exactly what happened. And Otamendi, huge blunder from their captain, from their veteran, from, at the moment now, so he's kind of Mr. Benfica because he's been there for so long, second time there, and the captain, et cetera, et cetera. It's a mistake, it happens, and he'll get over it because he's a veteran. But I'm not sure how they're going to get over the way they're playing at the moment and the sort of bluntness that they're showing offensively. I don't know what solution is here for Bruno Lage. He seems really stubborn in that he's going to play his guys and he's going to shoehorn whoever he has to, and that's it really. And then he's sort of will do what he does after the game and et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's players that should be starting that aren't. I think Sudakov is probably a player that should be starting in this team just because they need something different, something, someone to create something. I'm pretty sure Luka Bjelica will start once he's fit. But I think he just needs to go back to basics. Just change it to a 4-2-3-1, put Prestiani, Shaldrup, either wing, and then just stop with the sort of overcomplicated. You have Arjonas on the right, and it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and it's funny because we've been talking about their deficiencies in their performance for a while, but this was the first time it kind of caught up with them in terms of the result because they've got by on the results in recent games. We didn't see like you say, Andrew, we didn't see Luka Bakio. We did see a kind of cameo from Sudakov. So perhaps the reinforcements are in their way, Kevin, but I don't know if you saw anything in the game that kind of suggests that the improvements are coming with them.
Yeah, Sudakov, that was the improvement. I'm going to be as blunt as possible, and I think that the Benfica fans don't even appreciate it because when you spend the money that they do, when you have the stature that they do, when the club demands the success that it does, and they produce this performance against 10 men. Santa Clara had the 10 men in the first half. They have not had good results at all so far this season. This is enough to get a manager sacked. Let's be completely blunt here, just because, as much as it may seem harsh, these are the margins that we're working with at the moment. The standard is higher than it has ever been at the moment in terms of points, even when it seems like the quality has diminished somewhat. The points totals have been consistently high. So, one drop point in these sorts of games, considering that you will have to visit the likes of Famalicão, Guimarães, Braga, and your two rivals in the perspective of Benfica, Porto, Sporting. This is enough. This is completely unacceptable, especially at home. There was no redeeming qualities in this game for Benfica in the first half when it was mostly 11 against 11. Santa Clara, if anything, had more and better chances, like not more chances, but better chances. Even when they went down to 10 men, minutes later, they should have scored. That should have been 1-0 to Santa Clara in the first half. And I don't think any Benfica fan would even disagree. As much as they piled on the pressure in the second half, congratulations, you're Benfica. You're playing a very out of form Santa Clara at home. You should be dominating 11 to 10. And the fact of the matter is they weren't overly threatening. They didn't do anything that Porto didn't do to Nacional or Sporting didn't do to Famalicão. And that's completely unacceptable. And you can only look at the squad composition and the 11 that entered this game, and you can only blame one man, and that's Brulage, because it's you cannot fathom why he's still playing those two forwards, because Pavlidis has to facilitate Ivanovic, who is not played to his strengths in any way. Constantly was back to goal when he plays better in space, facing forward at the very least. So it doesn't even make sense the way that they kind of shoehorn together. Algrange, look, he's a fabulous player. But if he had any role in this game, I would argue it had to be at right back. Thiago Araújo, Tomás Araújo, I should say, did not really bring anything to this game. Maybe Algrange being more intelligent in this sort of movement, being more comfortable further forward would have provided a good alternative, a good overlap, perhaps provided an overload at times. I don't think it was the best game for Dal, although that he is quite a pass-heavy player. He's not exactly someone who's going to make a difference with a dribble, per se. I think he has his use, but he's not exactly a Carreras who could create a little bit more inspiration at times. Sheldrup, he's potentially the only team's creator, and he's not in his best moment of form. He's not exactly extremely explosive. He's not ex the most inspiring player. He's not a Di Maria, I'll put it that way. The end product is not near the same level. And then you have the question in midfield. I don't even think Rius had a bad game. At times, he was the only source of inspiration with shots outside the box, a little bit of a dribble, like a ball carry, trying to push Benfica closer to the final third. It's probably one of his better games so far, if anything. Enzel, he's the one who just provides the balance, distributes the ball quite simply. He's the protector, if anything, nothing flashy. I think that if you're going to have these two in attack, especially, this midfield does not work in any way, shape, or form, especially if you're putting Alshon to provide a little bit more protection as well in the role that he plays. So, as much as I can say, look, they've got Bristiani, he can make a difference. They've got even the likes of Bruma when he comes back. They've got enough options in theory. They've got the likes of Sudakov who will come in. They've got Lukaku who we yet to see. I think that the immediate change, it needs to be Sudakov comes in because he's a little bit more technically refined. He plays in the areas where Benfica currently have absolutely no inspiration. Santa had no issues forcing Benfica wide for the whole game. The only thing Benfica could do was cross over and over and over to no one. There was over 30 crosses. If you tell me which one they actually threatened from, you'll probably li be limited to the goal. So, yeah, I think that's the immediate change that needs to happen. Sudakov in, however you shoehorn that to happen. Large has done that so far with the 11 that he currently chooses. So, figure it out, I guess. And yeah, other than that, it's a lot of the same. Very uninspired. And defensively, we're going to ignore the fact that Otamendi, he did have a poor moment leading to that goal. Santa Clara threatened with 10 men various times. It wasn't just that chance. It wasn't just before they went down to 10 men. That is very, very concerning considering he had three centre backs in the initial composition of the back line and three centre midfielders. And considering you have very little creativity on the pitch, it just shouts unbalanced. And the only man that you can blame is Bruno Lage because you cannot say that these players are untailored to his way of playing. He's very much a guy who likes those sorts of direct plays, the likes of Arturo Klöglu. Look back, he was in the same mold. Richard Rijo and Barreiro, very similar players. Ivanovic, he's very much a player to play in the same style. So, what's the excuses now? Like, I'm very, 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 very interested to see how this is going to play out because for all that Benfica throws money at issues, and it looks like they've backed Lage's way of playing this time, Santa Clara were very easy, they were very happy just to push play out wide. And Benfica, through central areas, had nothing. While Porto and Sporting struggled at times, Benfica had nothing. So it's very worrying. Even if it wasn't 1-1, you cannot be having these performances as top three club that has aspirations for the title. Completely unacceptable. And Lage will be under a lot of pressure. And because Lage is under a lot of pressure, Huikoche is going to be in a lot of pressure because this wasn't all in this transfer window in a certain way. As much as they make the money in revenue, they did invest heavily in this window and it has not been paying off. If Lukaku does not get on off to a flying start as Aktürkoğlu did, and if Sudakov does not really threaten signing of either Hughes or Ivanovic, which really shows that you've got three major signings for two positions. That on itself is quite questionable. This could get very messy before October, which when is when the elections will happen.
I mean, I just want to stick with the Bruno Lage thing for a bit because I've always thought he's quite a sort of gifted manager in a way. Tactically, he's very brave in the way he sets up, etc. But it seems to me, and this is something we saw before, he kind of gets blind to what the problems are almost. And then he'll do strange things where he will change something in the team, but not really change what he should be changing, almost to like, be like, yeah, see, I'm doing something. And I think this time he did it where he was like changing goalkeepers and he was doing strange things with Antonio Silva not starting and then starting him. And then you look further up the field and you're like, no, that's where you need to find the solution. You've got two strikers that can't play together. Ivanovic does remind me a lot more of Gyökeres in that he should be a lone striker. He makes things happen on his own. He wants to make things happen on his own. And then you have Pavlidis, who is kind of your star striker. So now you've got these two guys that you're shoehorning into the team because you don't know what else to do, or you know what to do, but you won't do it just out of pigheadedness, or I'm not sure what else. But I think right now it's quite clear that Bruno Lage is probably on his way out. And I just don't see how. I mean, maybe he makes these changes and everything works out, but he's already lost so much favor with the Benfica fans, who are notoriously like not forgiving. And yeah, I'm not sure how they sort of get out of this.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation with Lage. I remember when he was brought back in, it almost felt inevitable that he was coming back after kind of Roger Schmidt and the whole, look, we tried an outsider, look how that went. It didn't go well, so now we need to bring in the company man because that's what's going to take us forward. And it took them to a certain place, perhaps with a little bit more stability internally. And I think Bruno Lage is very capable of, well, at times he's capable of managing upwards, but I completely agree. It's almost descended again in terms of he brought in stability, he brought in structure, and now he's kind of a victim almost of his own success. Now he's been given the reins, he doesn't know what to do with it, and I think he's kind of made a real rod for his own back with the squad planning, with the team selection, with like you say, dropping people, bringing in certain people. I think, yeah, those are his biggest issues. And I think the thing Benfica needs to be most worried about is after spending all that money and putting all that effort into the transfer market, some of the players that they're starting in these teams are, and this is my opinion, of course, not Benfica quality. And I mean that with the greatest of respect to the likes of Schelderup, who I just think when Benfica are starting with Schelderup on their left wing as their most creative outlet, I think they have big problems. And Luka Bacio could make a big difference. Sudakov could make a big difference. But that's only two players. And I think at the moment, they're probably more like four or five away from being good enough to really do what they should be able to do on paper, and that is dominate a league like the Liga Portugal, which I think they're quite far away from doing.
100%.
I mean, I will, guys, let's try and take the kind of smiles off your faces as we discuss the Benfica issues. But it is what it is at the moment. I think it's very accurate that they're not in a good place. I wanted to touch on Santa Clara again just before we move on, because I think Kevin's right to say that they had great chances, even down to 10 men. And I don't want to sound like I'm taking anything away from them, but I don't even really want to sit here and say this is like a really great Santa Clara team that's kind of ready to cause big clubs problems. They've not been in great form recently. The European football took a big toll on them. I don't think the players are at kind of peak form at the moment. And it was a real gift for that goal. I think, what we really should have been discussing was 10 men fighting valiantly, but ultimately coming up short. And then I don't think any Santa Clara fan would begrudge you saying that it was a gift or a result. And fair play to them because they got a point when they probably badly needed it. But I just don't see this as some kind of heroic underdog situation. I thought Benfica really just handed them on a plate, not just with the mistake, but with the attitude of the players. I mean, I looked at the likes of Pavlidis when they were playing. And again, maybe this is just my opinion reading into it, but I thought the body language was bad a lot of the time from someone like Pavlidis. I thought he played with a negativity. There was an opportunity that he missed, a big opportunity that he missed. And the attitude on his face for me wasn't that of a player who felt like he really. Like that was an opportunity that he had to take for his team. It kind of was like, oh, we're 1-0 up against 10 men. It's probably not going to come back and bite us. But it really did. And I think, it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. This is about, for me, it was never going to be last with the poor transfers, with the poor squad choice, with the poor starting 11s. It was always going to catch up to them. And this was just a game in which it happened. So it was quite a damaging result, and it will be interesting to see whether Bruno Lage stays much longer, or and how the team changes in the coming weeks with the one or two new signings. I think we definitely want to try and talk about some more games, guys. So let's keep it rolling and move on to, well, try and pick things up a bit, but sadly not. I mean, another team whose deficiencies have caught up with them in recent weeks, Braga, who lost 1-0 to Gil Vicente at home. It compounds a miserable run of form. I mean, two draws in a row was bad enough, but I think this damaging loss to Gil Vicente is just a step further for the team and puts Vicente under real pressure. I think there's a lot of Braga fans who are no longer giving him the benefit of the doubt at all. That said, we should, of course, give great credit to Gil Vicente, who continued to climb the table. They overtook Braga with this result. They're now in sixth place with 10 points, equal points to Famalicão, equal points to Benfica. The only loss that they've had this season against Porto. So they deserve a lot of credit. Andrew, I'll come to you. We've talked about Braga a lot, so feel free to kind of. We know what the issues are. Feel free to kind of brush over it if you want. But equally, I think it was a performance from Gil Vicente where they knew that they would have opportunities to exploit Braga and they were prepared to take them.
Yeah, credit to Gil Vicente. They play some good football. We've already seen it this season. They're one of the surprises of the season for me. In this game, they limited Braga to lots of half chances, and they were able to keep Braga at arm's length quite easily. Although Braga did help them by being largely ineffective. For Luís Esteves, with another powerhouse performance in midfield, he's been really good this season. Pablo with another goal, and he seems a lot more effective than we've probably seen previously from him. And it also helps when your team are playing that well and they're sort of generating those chances. Murilo with another good performance since he's come back. I thought Boato was very good in defense. And overall, they deserved that sort of hard-fought win. I want to give credit to César Puchet, who I know we're all sort of fans of his. He's a manager where he's got a strange reputation. He has the cycle that follows him at every club he joins. They look good for a while. Things start going a bit wrong. He struggles to steady the ship and then loses his job. And it seemed like those cycles were getting shorter and shorter. But the football was sort of getting better, I think, especially his last spell at Moreirense last season, I thought looked pretty good until it kind of didn't. But I say all this to say that maybe we're finally seeing Sergio Puchet really build something here. It's still early, but the difference is Gil had a good transfer window. They've had that time on the training ground, and it's clearly working. So maybe he can finally prove the doubters wrong, and he has quite a few doubters because he's been around and he's had various jobs, and it hasn't really worked out for him. I was going to gloss over Braga, but I'm not actually. Just because there's not much more to say that we haven't said already. At this point, it kind of becomes, it doesn't really, it's not very helpful if we just keep criticizing the same thing. But we did criticize the two striker system. I think well, 2 weeks ago, we spoke about it. It doesn't seem to work. So then Vincent decides to start three strikers in this one to baffle us even further. He'll probably say it was out of necessity because Roger Fernandez, his abrupt departure. But I'm sure there was a better solution than this. Gabri Martinez was about as ineffective as you could be on the right. Paul Victor wasn't much better. There's just a lot wrong with this team. The midfield doesn't seem right. Ricardo Horta obviously just coming back from an injury, so he couldn't start, but you can see how much things changed as soon as he got onto the field for that last 10 minutes that he played. He had two quick shots on target and he was a lot more direct. But throughout this, when they were chasing the game, and again, credit to Gil Vicente, they played really well. But while they were chasing the game, a lot of the patterns of play and the passing was so monotonous. There was no real threat. They had one or two sort of half chances, but I just don't. I think they play bad. I just think they're bad. There's just they're so unbalanced. There's no sort of idea of how they're going to create chances. And I think you saw at the end of the game the fans' reactions to the loss. You saw some of them sort of waving like white napkins and stuff. And Twitter today is all about sort of Vicens is sort of circling the drain at this point. So I think it's difficult times ahead for him. We'll see what Antonio Salvador does next. But yeah, credit to Gil Vicente, great performance and another good win for them.
I just really hope that Vicens is able to hold on to his job long enough to kind of get to his dream formation, which seems to be three centre backs, four central midfielders, and three strikers. If he could just try it once, I feel like he it would all
You know
finally
what?
click.
When I was watching this game and I saw the things he was doing and I was thinking back to our conversations about some of the silly things he's done, I thought, you know what? Daniel Sousa got fired for a lot less
It's so true. It's
because he
very
was out the
true.
door so quickly. Vicens is kind of just,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know.
Also, it's a really bad timing because Carlos Carvajal's just got a new job at Sport TV, so unfortunately he's going to be unavailable. So they'll have to, have to look elsewhere if they do end up replacing him. Kevin, to bring it back onto more positive territory, I'm so glad Andrew brought up Sergio Peixoto because I was going to do it as well, and I think he's another manager that we kind of share a similar taste for. A interesting recent career. I mean, that strange double spell at Paços de Ferreira was, I don't know, it depends how you look at it, probably a low point, but at least it showed some kind of desire. I think clearly what he has is a desire to find a home and to find a stability and a long-term club where I think he feels like he can flourish. Maybe this will be the one because he's certainly got off to a great start. And I'm enjoying personally seeing what he's doing with Gil Vicente at the moment.
I think that's a perfect way to put it about Peixoto. I mean, he needs some sort of stability. He's never completed 30 games in his professional career, at least at like a established professional club. That's completely ridiculous. As bad as you want to call him a manager or whatever, if you want to do that, 30 games is not enough to prove your whole worth at any point. And it's not like it's been completely negative. He's had good spells both times at Moreirense, even at Paços de Ferreira, it was not all negative. And it's seen right now where Paços de Ferreira was or are, perhaps was it's in the guaranteed trajectory
Very
eventually.
true.
I think personally the sort of reputation surrounding him is completely unfair. It's not like he's your typical Zé Mota, who I'm sure we're going to get onto, that is that sort of typical bounces around the league, very defensive football, no ideas, no inspiration, nothing forward thinking. That's not Peixoto at all. And it's been shown by this start by Gil Vicente, who I don't think were in a lot of people's considerations. I think considering the outgoings, the likes of Correa, Fujimoto, and more, I think a lot of people were perhaps even pessimistic about their chances this season, but the likes of Pablo have stepped up. Stivs was one of the best signings of the season, without a doubt. Very good in Nacional. And I did mention a couple of weeks ago, I liked him. I like seeing him a little bit deeper. And I think he's justified based off this performance. Everything flowed through him. And I think he's a lot better seeing the game and being able to influence it at more moments just because of his overall quality, the passing, the calmness, the calm that he projects on the ball to his team. And I think he was a great balance to Cáceres. I think that's great platforming for both. I think they're a really good duo. And yeah, I think it's seen the likes of Zé Carlos, who perhaps didn't have the most inspiring seasons last season. Conan, who comes back after an uninspiring spell abroad, both looking quite good at this moment in time. So I think you can only praise a manager because he does seem to be getting out of the team at a very premature moment in the season. And you have to think, with a little bit more stability, with a little bit more time, what can he build? Because he is still a very young manager. So I think it's a good moment to start appreciating César Peixoto. And I think it's even a thing that happens with a lot of managers, young managers in Portugal, perhaps come up with a little bit of hype, don't show it straight away, ju don't justify it, but with a little bit more experience, really start to get their wits about them, start to be able to adapt their ideas a little bit more freely. The likes of Vasco Seabra, he was heavily criticised after his spell at Estoril. Even the likes of Petit, he gained a reputation for being very, very negative, but at the Boavista side, that we know what happens to him eventually. Can you blame him? And since then, hasn't done a bad job. Didn't do a bad job previously either. Look, I think it's just a cycle. Perhaps we're just country of pessimists. I think if I'm talking about Portugal in general, a lot of people would agree if they're watching from there. I think there's a lot to praise about this team, as Andrew has done. And look, I can come on here and say, as much as perhaps it was a little bit premature for me to criticize Braga the way that I did after the first game that I saw of them, I think that the criticisms have eventually come true, and it wasn't helped by the recruitment at all. If it was already difficult, you cannot sell your only quality creator and expect the same results. And the results weren't even good then. So I think that's just suicide from Braga at a moment where they could really build upon a situation where their biggest rivals, Vitória, are not in a good moment either. And perhaps they could even threaten Benfica at a stretch where they're perhaps a little bit more vulnerable than they've been in the past. And they've squandered it. Whereas Gil Vicente, they had every right to crumble after the outgoings that they had, but they seem to have rebuilt very well, and they've got a very cohesive unit at this stage, which is not easy to do after five matches and to have immediate results showing that work. So, yeah, I think if there's a manager outside the likes of Vasco da Costa at Moreirense, even Hugo Oliveira from Famalicão, the obvious options, and I know that Gil Vicente at the moment are right up there, I think that's a very good outside chance for a little unexpected European push. And overall, I think it's a moment to really reflect, and perhaps we should have a little bit more patience with these sorts of managers because he's showing quality right now. And the alternatives are what we've seen elsewhere, a couple of outgoings after five matches. No one wants to see that. We'd really rather try and value what we have, and the likes of Sérgio Peixoto is really justifying that.
Very, very true, and I think a really important point to round up on there. And I make that match week five and the first I told you so of the season on the Long Ball Football podcast. Long-term listeners will know they will shamelessly be dropped throughout the season whenever appropriate. So good to hear that from Kev early doors. Gents, we've not got a lot of time left, but let's do some more kind of quick fire games to touch on some of the more interesting results from around the league this season. One that caught my eye, Estoril's first win of the season comes in match week five. They beat AVS 3-1 at home. As alluded to, it did lead to Jose Mota's sad demise, because you won't get an easier game than playing AVS at the moment. And Estoril gladly took their chance. Goals from João Carvalho, Ricardo Sanchez, and Lominadze earned them the win. AVS did get a consolation goal, but it was to be futile in the end. An important first win, Andrew, but like we said kind of last week, they've not really lived up to the standards they set last season, Estoril under Ian Cafro, but still there's a lot of good players in the team, and they got their win when they had the opportunity.
And this could be the win that sort of gets them going, builds them a bit of momentum. Yes, it is against AVS, one of the worst teams in the league, probably the worst team in the league, actually. And they were able to sort of play good football because they were allowed to score some good goals, build some momentum, and they'll just look forward and carry on. As for AVS, I mean, José Mota, I was trying to remember the last time he really did anything good or of note in Portuguese football. It's been a while. And it was one of those things everyone kind of knew it was going to happen eventually, just by the way they were playing, but also his reputation.
I mean, if you don't count keeping ABS up after being in charge for three games last season as something good in Portuguese football, I think we're being
That's
a
it.
bit.
That's his biggest achievement for
That's
sure.
his
Yeah,
biggest
not the
achievement.
Taça
So.
de Portugal in 2018.
Very
And why
true.
did we have to mention that? No need.
Yeah, a sad situation for ABS. I mean, listen, we're not going to get into a long discussion on ABS today just because I think it's a podcast in itself. But listen, what an interesting club and an interesting situation they find themselves in. I think they have lots of problems to try and fix if they're going to have any kind of long-term future. Kev, I mean, a team we haven't talked about and a team that currently sit fourth in the table. Moreirense, they have 4 wins from five. They beat Real 3-1 at the weekend. Sporting loanee Diogo Travassos with one of the goals. The veteran Marcelo with another, and Alan, a firm favourite of this podcast with the third. A great win for them. And it's been a fantastic season. They haven't put a foot wrong, barely.
They've been unbelievable, really. The themes that we can really, I don't think we've mentioned Moreirense too much this season. So the common themes, as much as in this game, it kind of deferred a little bit with the entry of Trovas, commonly known nowadays as a right back, where he played at Strela, came in more in the forward position down the right flank with a real striker's finish, if anything, in this game. I think that was a bonus, but throughout this whole season, this 5-game stretch, as much as it is very early, they've just looked unbelievable in midfield. I forgive the pronunciation, but Stepanović, Mateja, I'm going to go through that.
Sounds good to me.
Alan, the likes of Afonso Assis when he was in the 11, brilliant. Vasco Sousa has come in, known for his time at Porto in the academy, came in, didn't put a foot wrong. Looks like a very promising midfield because it's also got depth. Having the likes of Afonso Assis, son of Nuno Assis, for anyone who knows, that is unbelievable depth for the likes of Moreirense. The wingers, they have a capacity to change games. Unlike a lot, we've talked a lot, even on this program today, about the likes of even Witty, who came on, Paulinho Boy, who was playing for Nacional, even Soriz from Famalicão didn't have the greatest games in terms of product. Kiko Pondo really breaks that sort of mold, can be very creative, but can also provide that final pass. He's done so consistently this season, really provided service for the likes of Chetín, who was formerly at Santa Clara and Braga, who's been leading the line quite well, bringing a little bit more end product to his game. And I think Charles Tegoya on the other side, or Cedric Tegoya, I should say, hasn't disappointed in any way. And I think the real standout, the underrated one, is probably Danish Pint. He's really cooked up a very good partnership with whoever's down the right flank with him, overlaps to a great degree. Defensively, couldn't fault him in this game against Chihuahua. In general, don't think he's put too much of a foot wrong either. What he brings in terms of being able to even beat a man from his position in right back is quite uncanny for the role for the likes of Moreirense, who isn't the team with the biggest budget. But I think we've come a little bit accustomed to them finishing very firmly mid-table, which is weird. They're a little bit like an Arouca or a Casapia, always away from danger, but they really shouldn't be. So all credit to the last man I'm going to mention, and I know it's supposed to be quick fire, but they're genuinely so good, it's so hard to do it. The fact that Moreirense are third, Benfica are fourth at the moment, even if Benfica have a
Exactly.
game in hand, it's incredible. Even after just 5 games, still not normal. Vasco da Costa, since his time in the Estoril Academy, since the time at Leiria, unbelievable manager, really translates his ideas well, puts his team playing very positive football, very confident in possession. A brilliant 4-3-3 in a consistent manner. Wherever he goes, it seems to have success. So, considering we've hyped up the like of Peixoto, Seabra, Amorim previously, and even the likes of João Pereira, Casapia, Vasco Pereira Costa is definitely next up. And let's see if we didn't miss a trick by putting Moreirense as the surprise package of the season.
Well, let's see if you're this enthusiastic after you guys play them next week, because they've got Sporting next week.
I won't be. Didn't
So I love that. I
João
love that.
Pereira I
Didn't
knew that
João
was
Pereira
coming.
lose to them at Moreirense last season? I'm pretty sure he did. That was like his last
Yes,
straw.
yes, good
Yes, it's
point.
Moreira de Conakry is very hard to visit. I know that Sporting are at home next week, but that's going to be very, very tough.
That's going to be a
But
cracking game,
let's
that.
just mark down 27th of October in your calendar, because you got to go there.
Yeah, that'll be fine. We'll be fine. Everyone will be back. Everyone will be back. Fingers crossed.
Albert, please send me a recording of this show, just this little
Okay.
snippet. Thank you.
We will see, of course. But you're quite right, Kevin. They do deserve some attention, as you say. I think I said fourth. They are, of course, third in the table. You're right to point out, having a great season, so they deserve a lot of credit, and they deserve the respect of any team that plays them at the moment. And just briefly, the only downside to this game, of course, Rio Ave, who I think will consider losing 3-1 to Morelens. In terms of resources that these teams have, that should really go down as a poor result. We've seen Rio Ave spend money that Morelens do not have. They've brought in managers that I don't think Morelens could have done. So, a very interesting situation. I guess we should also mention, just unfortunately, the other sacking, Jose Faria, was sacked by Estrela da Amadora. They lost 2-0 to Vitória. Clearly, that's now the benchmark for whether a manager should be sacked. If you let Vitória beat you, you've not done well enough. We also had first win of the season for Alverca against Tondela, 1-0. So I was going to call that a relegation 6 points, but maybe not. The way Alverca have started to improve, we could be looking at the dream of a mid-table finish for them. So lots of interesting stuff happening around the leagues. But gents, I think we will leave it there for this week's show. A big thank you to everybody for listening. Of course, a big thank you to my co-hosts, Andrew and Kevin, for joining me once again. We'll be, of course, back next week to discuss all next week's action from the Primeira Liga. But that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.